This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
This is Ed Murphy, and this morning I will be reading Hour 3 of USA Today, which includes TV listings, obituaries, and a live section of USA Today for Friday, May 10th, 2024. I will start with the TV listings for Friday evening. WLWT NBC 5, 7 p.m. is WLWT 5 News at 7. 7:30 is Access Hollywood. 8 p.m. is Password with Howie Mandel. 9 p.m. is Dateline NBC. 11 p.m. is WLWT 5 News at 11. And 11:30 is The Tonight Show. WCPO 9 ABC, 7 p.m. is WCPO 9 News at 7. 7:30 is FC Cincinnati Weekly. 8 p.m. is Jeopardy Masters. 9 p.m. is 2020. 11 p.m. is WCPO 9 News at 11. And 11:30 is Jimmy Kimmel Live. WKRC CBS Channel 12, 7 p.m. is Inside Edition. 7:30 is Entertainment Tonight. 8 p.m. is SWAT. 9 p.m. is Fire Country. 10 p.m. is Blue Bloods. 11 p.m. is Local 12 News at 11, and 11:30 is The Late Show. Sin CW 12.2, 7 p.m. is Family. 7:30 is Family. 8 p.m. is Penn and Teller Fool Us. 9 p.m. is 100 Days to Indy. 10 p.m. is The National Desk, and 11 p.m. is The National Desk. WXIX Fox 19, 7 p.m. is Wheel of Fortune. 7:30 is Jeopardy. 8 p.m. is WWE Friday Night SmackDown. 10 p.m. is Fox 19 Now at 10. 11 p.m. is Fox 19 Now at 11. And 11:30 is Friends. WCET PBS 48, 7 p.m. is the PBS News Hour. 8 p.m. is Washington Week. 8:30 is Firing Line with Margaret. 9 p.m. is Great Performances. 11 p.m. is Amanpour and Company. MyNet 64, 7 p.m. is Bang. 7:30 is Young. 8 p.m. is Chicago PD. 9 p.m. is Chicago PD. 10 p.m. is Local 12 News. 10:30 is Bang. 11 p.m. is Young. And 11:30 is Men. NBC 2, 7 p.m. is Inside Edition. 7:30 is Jeopardy. 8 p.m. is Password. 9 p.m. is Dateline, 11 p.m. is News, and 11:30 is The Tonight Show. CBS 7, 7 p.m. is Wheel, 7:30 is ET, 8 p.m. is SWAT, 9 p.m. is Fire Country, 10 p.m. is Blue Bloods, 11 p.m. is News, and 11:30 is The Late Show. PBS 14, 7 p.m. is DW News, 7:30 is News, 8 p.m. is Father Brown, 9 p.m. is Masterpiece, 10 p.m. is The Tunnel, Vengeance, 11 p.m. is News, and 11:30 is DW News. PBS 16, 7 p.m. is BBC News, 7:30 is Good Road, 8 p.m. is Washington Week, 8:30 is G-Zero, 9 p.m. is Muhammad Ali, 11 p.m. is TBA. ABC 22, 7 p.m. is Family Feud. 7:30 is Family Feud. 8 p.m. is Jeopardy Masters. 9 p.m. is 2020. 11 p.m. is News. And 11:30 is Kimmel. Fox 22.2, 7 p.m. is Bang. 7:30 is Bang. 8 p.m. is WWE Friday Night SmackDown. 10 p.m. is News. 11 p.m. is iCrime. 11:30 is Family. CW 26, 7 p.m. is Young. 7:30 is Young. 8 p.m. is Penn and Teller Fool Us. 9 p.m. 100 Days to Indy. 10 p.m. is News. 10:30 is 2 News. 11 p.m. is Friends. And 11:30 is Friends. ION 43, 7 p.m. is Hawaii 5-0. 8 p.m. Hawaii 5-0. 9 p.m. Hawaii 5-0. 10 p.m. is Hawaii 5-0, and 11 p.m. is Hawaii 5-0. PBS 54, 7 p.m. is the PBS News Hour. 8 p.m. is Comment. 8:30 is Washington Week. 9 p.m. is Great Performances, Hamlet. 11 p.m. is BBC News. 11:30 is Kentucky. Now for the obituaries today for Friday, May 10th, 2024. Carol A. Connors, 86, Cincinnati, Ohio, May 6, Gilligan Funeral Homes. Robert W. Linger, 66, Cincinnati, May 6, Rado Funeral Service, Delhi. Timothy Mitchell, 73, Cincinnati, Ohio, May 4, Hodap. Tina Whalen, 77, Fort Thomas, Kentucky, May 6, Dubling Molenkamp Urschel Funeral Home. And now, in the life section of USA Today, making waves. Miss Teen USA resigns. Miss Teen USA 2023 is resigning just days after Miss USA Noelia Voigt relinquishes her title. Uma Sofia Servistava shared a statement Wednesday announcing her departure, saying her personal values no longer fully align with the direction of the organization. She continued, I will always look back on my time as Miss NJ Teen USA fondly and the experience of representing my state as a first-generation Mexican-Indian American at the national level was fulfilling in itself. On Monday, Voigt announced her resignation as Miss USA to focus on her mental health, but there had been online speculation about if that is the full picture. Fans noticed the first letters of the first 11 sentences in her statement spelled, I am silenced. It's your birthday today. Who's celebrating today? Bono is 64, Kenan Thompson is 46, and Linda Evangelista is 59. And horoscope sanctuary, Aries, March 21st to April 19th. Gift of gab. The moon's harmonious aspect to communication planet Mercury offers easygoing conversations and well-meaning gossip. Taurus, April 20th to May 20th. Organizing your thoughts. Get pent-up ideas out on paper and confide in an advisor. Gemini, May 21st to June 21st. Turn to for advice. Others seek you out as a shoulder to cry on. Cancer, June 22nd to July 22nd. Key business conversations. Find the balance between professional and personal. Leo, July 23rd to August 22nd. Swapping sentiments. Today's harmonious connection between the Moon and Mercury favors lighthearted discussions on beliefs and ideals. Virgo, August 23rd to September 23rd. Doing the necessary research? You're in the mood to dig deep. Knowledge is power. Libra, September 23rd to October 23rd. Are you on the same page? Swap stories and share sentiments with a partner. Scorpio, October 24th to November 21st. Giving or receiving advice? Insights are unlocked during conversations with a co-worker. Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21st. Sentimental conversations? You've been holding your feelings back. The moon's harmonious connection to chatty Mercury facilitates an honest heart-to-heart. Capricorn, December 22nd to January 19th. Problem-solving? You instinctively engineering workarounds and course-correct frustrating issues. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th. Get creative. The moon's harmonious connection to Mercury is perfect for play and flexing your imaginative muscles. Pisces, February 19th to March 20th. Ask for advice. Chosen family or friends need your feedback. Now in USA Today, movies, Ethan Hawke's new role is Proud Dad by Patrick Ryan, USA Today. When Maya Hawke was a high school junior, an English teacher turned her into a short stories of Flannery O'Connor. Her dad, Ethan Hawke, had been a fan of O'Connor's writing since childhood. "So it became a meeting place for us to talk about," he says. "Flannery certainly stirs up a lot of questions. Her journals are kind of hypnotizing because they're deeply personal and deeply earnest. Maya was really struck by them and started sharing them with me." Now, the father and daughter have teamed up for their first film together, Wildcat, in theaters nationwide Friday. Directed by Ethan, 53, and starring Maya, 25, the unconventional biopic traces O'Connor's struggles to publish her first novel while also reckoning with faith in her own mortality. The Georgia-born author was diagnosed with lupus at 25 and died in 1964 at age 39. Laura Linney, Steve Zahn, and Cooper Hoffman have supporting roles playing real and fictional characters as O'Connor's stories bleed into their daily life. "I knew a movie about her would be a movie about imagination," says Ethan, who made his film directorial debut in 2001's Chelsea Walls, starring Uma Thurman, Maya's mom, and his ex-wife. He tells USA Today about Wildcat and more. Question: you and Maya both started acting professionally as teenagers. What impresses you most about how she's carried herself in Hollywood? Answer: she has a great aptitude to be herself. I experienced a certain amount of celebrity young, and I know how imprisoning that can be. When you feel judged, you don't really want to do anything. It's very hard to make mistakes and do all the things that are necessary to grow up. She handles herself so well, even having the desire to tackle such a complicated, difficult woman as Flannery O'Connor. So I just admire her as a director. Just admire her. As a director, is there a difference when you're working with someone who's family? I've done 9 movies with Richard Linklater, and I started a theater company when I was young with my closest friends. So the idea of using friendship and intimacy as a launching pad to create is something I believe in. Even as a kid, listening to John Lennon and Paul McCartney, knowing they were best friends, you feel the secrets of their friendship in their songs. You can tell they've built on something real. So a shorthand can be really useful if you're professional about it. Are you and Maya still hoping to make your Beatles comedy, Revolver? That's one of those COVID casualties. There are a lot of films that were in pre-production, raising money that died on the vine in those couple years. You made Maya a Beatles compilation album for her 13th birthday, which found its way into the scene in Boyhood, 2014. How did that happen? I was telling that story to Rick, and he was like, "Oh, we should put that in the movie." That project was one of high water marks of my professional life, to do such an experimental film that's so deeply personal to all of us, and then having us find its way into a national Zeitgeist. It keeps you idealistic that making strange films can make a difference. Richard Linklater is shooting a movie musical of Stephen Sondheim's Merrily We Roll Along over the next 20 years. Was 12 years making Boyhood not enough for him? That's funny. Through a friend, I met Sondheim at a party, and he was obsessed with what kind of rehearsal process went into before Trilogy. He really wanted to understand how those movies were made. And he asked such micro questions that I was like, "You should meet Richard Linklater." Then when Boyhood came out, they met it, and it was really Sondheim who was taking Richard into Merrily. Rick is a secret Sondheim fanatic, so that's going to be one of the most anticipated movies in the next 20 years. Have there been any recent discussions about the fourth Before movie? The trilogy feels complete to us. There was certainly a moment where we all considered, wait, Is there a pandemic movie with our characters, Jesse and Celine? That didn't happen, but it would have been interesting. If there were another movie, maybe we'd start another trilogy over the later years. Dead Poets Society was released 35 years ago. Looking back, what kind of support was Robin Williams to you as a young actor starting out? He got me my first agent, who's still my agent today, so I'm incredibly indebted to him. It's only now that I realize how indebted I am to that whole project. It really shaped my life, and it showed me how a movie can interact with the public over time and speak multi-generationally. When you're driving to a set at 4 a.m., learning your lines is thrilling to think, oh, this is worth the effort. You recently reunited with Dead Poets co-star Josh Charles for the Fortnite music video. Were you surprised to get a call from Taylor Swift? Definitely. Maya has been going to her concerts for years. I think she was like 14 the first time she went. So Josh and I were both very surprised, but it was very flattering. Now in streaming, Gotwa's Dr. Amps Up Cool Factor by Kelly Lauer, USA Today. Meet the all-new Doctor Who. He's still an alien, and he still travels through time and space. But this one is a sharper dresser than you might expect, a little more chaotic, and just a lot cooler than previous Doctors, and cooler than you, too. There are just effortlessly hip vibes emanating from Nukti Gatwa, the 15th Doctor in the 60-year-old British Science Fiction Institution, and the first person of color in the full-time role. As the kids would say, he slays. It does feel like a new era. Everything feels refreshed, says Gatwa, 31, who's familiar to American viewers as one of the Kens in last summer's Super Smash, Barbie, and from Netflix's comedy, Sex Education. His name is pronounced Shuti Gatwa. We're doing little things a bit differently, but it's still the same show we know and love. The series has a new doctor and companion, Millie Gibson, as Ruby Sunday, and streams the new 8-episode season on Fridays at a new home, Disney Plus, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Fresh off 3 critically acclaimed specials, also on Disney Plus, celebrating its 60th anniversary last November, there is an energy to the new episodes that was woefully absent in the most recent seasons of BBC America, which starred Jodie Whittaker, who's a decade older than Gatwa, so there's fun to be had adventuring through time and space again. A lot of science fiction and fantasy, in particular, can be dark, can be sinister, and can be aggressive, says Russell T. Davis, the writer who brought Who into the modern era in 2005 and has returned as executive producer. Doctor Who can do all those things, but I think Doctor Who uniquely can be quite mad. I wanted madness, chaos, nuttiness, wildness, fun. There is madness in the first few episodes, which take the Doctor and Ruby back to the Paleolithic era, a baby farm in a future run by actual babies, and back to the 1960s, where they're pursued by a villain played by drag queen Jinx Monsoon. But it's not all fun and games. Davies is keenly aware that we live in dark, challenging times. He wants the series to reflect that with pointed references to political topics, including abortion and LGBTQ plus rights, attacks on drag queens, we must see the waves coming. And obviously, that's my world, says Davies, a gay man who frequently makes television about queer characters. I will always have something to say about that. Also keeping the show grounded is the present day are Gatwa and Gibson, a young and giddy pairing giving big Gen Z energy, even if Gatwa, 31, is slightly older. I would hope that Doctor is a Doctor for all generations, Gatwa says. Energy is what fuels the Doctor. We described the relationship between the doctor and Ruby as energetic and fast, which feels quite youthful. Gatwa spent years playing a teen in Education, a teen comedy about an amateur high school sex therapist, and has made his mark on the fashion world with bold red carpet looks, including a metal breastplate. He was shirtless underneath at this year's Vanity Fair's Oscar party. He has a strong sense of style, just like the 15th Doctor. The first time Lord had quite a while to change the costumes frequently. I've done doctors who stayed in the same suit for years on end, and I was beginning to think it's odd that they never changed clothes. It is surprising that I wanted that before we cast Nutti, Davis said. Quite by chance, we cast a man who's one of the world's greatest clothes horses. He looks beautiful in anything. Davis said he also was inspired by fans who intricately recreate the Doctor's costumes as cosplay at convention. There's such joy in cosplay and diving deep. Let's get them a great swimming pool. Gatwa shares Davies' enthusiasm for the Doctor's fashion-forward outfits. Trips to the Regency era and the 60s were his particular favorites, but says the Doctor's on-screen looks don't reflect his own personal style. I certainly share a sense of loving clothes with the Doctor's, but no, our styles are very different. The Doctor is very electric. He can wear anything. Maybe one day there will be a Venn diagram between the pair of us, but not at the moment. Does it mean the Doctor will be rocking exposed midriffs and metal breastplates in the future? Cosplayers can only dream. Now in television, George's Death is a Sheldon Shock by Brian Alexander, USA Today. You can't say you didn't see George Cooper Sr.'s death coming after 7 seasons of Young Sheldon. The prequel spinoff series to The Big Bang Theory, after all, in the original CBS series, Sheldon Cooper, Jim Parsons, referenced his football coach father, George Sr., who died from a heart attack when the young physics genius was 14 and growing up in East Texas. George's senior death was part of the Big Bang Theory mythology, which was crucial to connect by the end of The Sheldon, which is narrated by Parsons. Still, the off-screen heart attack of George Sr., Lance Barber, revealed in the final moments of the Thursday episode, the last before the May 15th two-part series finale, is, well, heartbreaking. And not just for Sheldon, Ian Armitage, and devoted fans. It was even heartbreaking for everyone on the set making that show, says Big Bang Theory and Young Sheldon co-creator and executive producer Chuck Lorre. We're all so invested in this character. Being fictional doesn't take away the difficulty in saying goodbye. It's been 7 years in the making. We all knew this would happen. Here are the ramifications of George Sr.'s Young Sheldon's death. How did Sheldon Cooper's father die in Young Sheldon? Everything seemed to be falling into place for the new grandfather, George Sr., suddenly sailing amid his sometimes stormy family life. His wife, Mary, Zoe Perry, and daughter, Missy, Regan Revord, are even supportive of his dream job offer, coaching football at Houston's Rice University, which will require a family move. With the stakes so high, it makes the tragedy that unfolds an even bigger punch in the gut, says Barber. George Sr. survives a ladder climb, fixing the roof for the house sale. His son, Georgie, Montana Georgian, who will lead another spinoff series next season, admonishes him for the safety reasons. The two carry away the ladder in a tender father-son moment. But the next day, as George Sr. heads off to work, he picks up his travel mug, promises to be back for a family photo shoot, and gives an unacknowledged see you later. Sheldon doesn't look up from his book as his father walks out of the kitchen door into heavenly bright sunlight, never to return. It was purposely a banal nothing moment in Sheldon's life that he will struggle with, says Laurie, because he learns that the last time he'll ever see his father, he will live to regret that moment in his life where he'll say, I could have done that better. Hours later, the Schock family is informed that George Sr. died of a heart attack. Sheldon wordlessly sits with stunned expression, processing the unfathomable loss. Sheldon's death fulfills George Sr.'s character's Big Bang resurrection. George Sr., frequently the butt of adult Sheldon's dark humor in Big Bang, is the flawed character who changes the most because of young Sheldon. In Big Bang Theory, when George was an off-screen character who's no longer alive, you could make all the jokes you want. But young Sheldon is a sweeter family show, says Steve Holland, a producer and writer on both series. And because of Lance Barber's portrayal of George and young Sheldon, he didn't believe his dad could be that bad. For example, about Sheldon explains in Big Bang Theory that he knocks 3 times on the door because he traumatically walked in on his cheating father having relations with a mysterious blonde woman. In a March episode, the alleged infidelity is explained away in a scene where Sheldon walks in on a blonde wig Mary role-playing with her husband as a campy German named Helga. George Sr.'s death completes his character redemption, explaining why Sheldon has such a dark view of his father. Sheldon is immediately consumed with grief and remorse over his final non-goodbye, which he obsesses over, starting with the last haunting stare. Sheldon is already playing his last moments over and over, says Barber. All the regrets are all the things that he wishes he said. What will happen in a young Sheldon finale? The 2-part May 16th finale, 8 Eastern, features Sheldon and his family's grieving at George Sr.'s funeral. But the finale also finds joy after loss. As Sheldon moves on to college, the California Institute of Technology, as fans already know, Parsons returns as an older Sheldon, reprising his role with Mayim Bialik, who plays his wife, Amy, for the first time since Big Bang ended in 2019. The screen couple has 2 young children, and Sheldon's struggles with fatherhood have softened his feelings about his own father, George Sr. There's a recognition that his father is a human being who is flawed but doing the very best he can, says Laurie. There's an epiphany you have about your parents when you're older. This finale is very much about Sheldon's perspective on his father. It changes for the better given time and his own experience raising his children, who he doesn't understand. In movie review, Simeon Sizzle, but story sags a bit in Kingdom, by Brian Truitt, columnist, USA Today. The issue of humans and simians is existentially conflict arises again in the new Planet of the Apes, this time with a coming-of-age sci-fi adventure that's a piece of visually stunning world-building more thoughtful than coherent. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, rated PG-13 in theaters Friday, is a sequel to the Stellar Apes trilogy led by Andy Serkis' iconic chimpanzee leader Caesar. Set in a landscape where people have gone feral while super smart apes rule thanks to a man-made virus. Director Wes Ball, Maze Runner, is a proven commodity in the post-apocalyptic space, and Kingdom aims to bring ideas into the sprawling blockbuster atmosphere, though that gambit winds up weighed down by its own ambitions. The new Apes is set many generations later, after the death of Caesar, a kind and compassionate sort who believed humans and apes could one day live together. His specter looms large over Kingdom, which centers on a naive young chimp named Noah, played via performance capture by Owen Teague, and an earth where nature has reclaimed the land. Noah and his friends, Ayana, Travis Jeffrey, and Suna, Lydia Peckham, ready for a big day in their lives among the Eagle Clan, so called because of the birds they raised. But the peaceful existence in their village is disrupted by a brutal attack from a horde of masked apes who burn Noah's home and leave him for dead. Noah wakes, battered and vying to save his friends and family who've been taken, and he first falls in with Raka, Peter McCrone, a wise orangutan who lives by Caesar's idealistic beliefs. They meet a young human named Faye, Fira Allen, who is at first distrustful of her new allies until they save her from the same big bad apes that torched Noah's villages. The trio learns these villains are goons for the tyrannical Bonobo, Proximus Caesar, Kevin Duran. Ruling a coastal kingdom of apes, Proximus has taken Caesar's name, yet twists his words to force his prisoners to crack a large vault and plump the mysterious human treasures within. He's both a fan of mankind and a symbol of our innate cruelty in ape form. Just as the previous films, the main draw is the apes themselves, computer-generated simian wonders who immerse audiences into their world. They look better than ever, with Noah's tearful eyes delivering so much fragility and emotion in a close-up after a tragic scene, and a performance capture wizardry, a signature aspect of the new Apes movies, feels more groundbreaking than ever. At the same time, none of the major players in Kingdom reach the same level of acting or personality as Circus Caesar. There is an extremely high bar, though, and there are some pretty great apes. Teague's Noah grows on you because of his plight, while McCone makes Raka a scene-stealing hoot with a kind soul. Allen, a regular on Netflix's The Witcher, also shines in a meaty role as a human who is more complicated than she appears. The early apes movies from the 60s and 70s were defined by their genre innovation and shock endings, and the Caesar movies are simply a great tale well told. Kingdom is less confident in its storytelling. It explores themes of legacy and species coexistence with a metaphor-laden plot that feels too long at 2.5 hours, and it begs for more exposition at the beginning before overdoing it later on. The movie ultimately does satisfy by its end, even as it emphasizes philosophy and message over logical narrative choices. Kingdom checks most of the boxes for longtime apes fans, and newbies don't need to do any prior homework as a standalone story that mostly explains itself. And as humans, you do commiserate with the on-screen apes themselves because everything felt a little better back when Caesar was around. Now in Health and Wellness, Bad Breath Can Be a Condition or a Symptom by Daryl Austin, USA Today. Few things are as off-putting as having bad breath. We inwardly cringe to turn away when a friend or coworker has stinky breath. And identifying an unpleasant odor coming out of one's own mouth in social gatherings can be embarrassing and even lead to anxiety about being around others. No one wants bad breath, and face-to-face interactions are simply more present when it's properly taken care of, says Cassandra Heath, a registered dental hygienist at Mesa View Dental in St. George, Utah. But not wanting bad breath and understanding what causes it are two different things. Here's what's behind unpleasant mouth odor and how to prevent it. What is halitosis? Though some people think of halitosis and bad breath as being two different things, they are actually one and the same, says Dr. Christopher Pullins, a family medicine physician at the Mayo Clinic. Indeed, as the official medical name for mouth odor, halitosis is actually Latin for bad breath. Though we often think of bad breath as being temporary, halitosis can also be chronic, explains Dr. Marissa Price, an expert spokesperson for the American Dental Association and a pediatric dentist at Boston's Children's Hospital. It's also not uncommon. Studies show that 50% of adults have had bad breath or halitosis at some point in their lives, she says. What are the symptoms of bad breath? Well, most of the obvious symptom of bad breath is, well, bad breath. There are other symptoms one can watch for. These include a white coating on the tongue, a dry mouth, or excess mucus entering the back of your throat from one's nose or sinuses, usually stemming from nasal irritation, allergies, or a bacterial infection. This is called a postnasal drip and often accompanies mouth odors, says Heath. And because bad breath often is associated with tooth decay, plaque buildup around one's teeth can be another sign to look out for. Persistent bad breath can be a warning sign of gum disease, which is caused by genetics, leftover plaque, or both, says Price. It's worth noting that gum disease and postnasal drips can be either symptoms or causes of mouth odor. What causes bad breath? Another cause of bad breath is eating stinky or spicy foods such as onions, tuna, flavored potato chips, chilies, beef jerky, horseradish, and garlic. Smoking can also contribute to bad breath, says Pullins. Dry mouth causes stinky breath as well. It stems from a lack of saliva, and saliva has the important job of keeping the mouth clean. Dry mouth can have many causes, such as medications, salivary gland problems, or mouth breathing, explains Price. Indeed, decreased saliva production at night or drying out of one's mouth due to snoring all night is why many people wake up with what we refer to as morning breath. But the most common cause of bad breath is the presence of bacteria. There are hundreds of types of bad breath-causing bacteria living naturally in your mouth, explains Price. These bacteria grow in your mouth, which acts as a natural hothouse. She explains that mouth bacteria feed on the plaque between the teeth and the leftover food after we've eaten, which leads to a foul-smelling waste product being left behind. He says that one of the most common places to find an accumulation of these bacteria is on the tongue. If you fail to clean this surface, the buildup can cause your breath to really stink, she explains. And while Pullins agrees that 90% of halitosis cases originate from an oral source, he said there are times when smelly breath also is related to gastrointestinal issues, such as acid reflux or GERD, or due to certain medical conditions, such as liver or kidney disease. While conditions like these often acquire medical intervention, Price says that bad breath generally can be prevented by staying hydrated and by regularly eliminating bacteria through good oral hygiene. It's also wise to avoid smoking and to steer clear of the foods that lead to bad breath, she says. Now in life, mom goes viral for Mother's Day rules, suggesting grandmas be celebrated on a different day. An Indiana mother is going viral for admitting that she doesn't celebrate her mother or mother-in-law on Mother's Day, but on different days so she can enjoy the holiday for herself. This may ruffle feathers, Emily Werner said in her TikTok that has gathered 2.1 million views, but I am the one deep into mothering right now. It's Mother's Day, not Grandmother's Day, Werner says. In her post, Werner says she established the Mother's Day rules after spending her first Mother's Day coordinating grandparent visits, and she didn't get to do anything for herself. It was like, I'm not doing this again, she said. So now her family celebrates her mother and mother-in-law on different days, and they do the same setup for Father's Day. I'm going to take the day how I want to take the day, she ended her video. Her mom completely understands. Whether USA Today Tuesday, Werner told USA Today Tuesday that her mother is very supportive of the change she's made around the holiday. As a mom of three daughters, she remembers what it was like to have really little kids and too often feel spread thin, Werner said. She completely understands my desire to shift the focus for now to spending the day with my little family and doing something for myself that I otherwise might not feel like I have time and energy to do, she said. For this Mother's Day, Warner's husband made brunch reservations for their family of four, and just like she said in her TikTok, she will be spending time solo planting in her garden. My garden is one of my happy places, and I look forward to planting it all winter, she said. Warner is challenging other women to take the day for themselves, too. Changing sometimes that has been the norm for a long time can be hard and uncomfortable, she said. I have found the best thing to do is be honest. And if it's ultimately decided that Mother's Day is better shared, then another day can be carved out for moms, she suggested. Is Mother's Day reserved for moms in the trenches? The debate about which moms should be celebrated on Mother's Day is not new. Last year, TikTok user posed a question about how to handle the weird holiday when all mothers seem to want a piece of it. So when do I, as a mother who now lives near her mother, when do I celebrate myself? Another TikToker weighed in on a Mother's Day for Moms in the Trenches debate, saying that the bottom line is that moms with young kids should do whatever they want on Mother's Day, without obligation or guilt. Moms go back and forth in comments. While Warner's mom is supportive of divvying up Mother's Day festivities, not everyone agreed. When did the younger generation just totally throw us to the wolves? One woman on TikTok said in a video response. It's just the moms with young kids that should really be celebrated on Mother's Day. That's just the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Another poster wrote, you selfish women want your husbands to forget about their moms for you. Can't wait until your kids grow up and do the same to you. One suggested there was enough love to go around for everyone. It honestly shocks me that more people don't just celebrate Mother's Day, Father's Day, as one big family get-together and celebrate all the moms, dads, in one, the user wrote. Still, many commenters have come to the side of Warner and other moms of young kids. I think the problem is that planning gifts, kids still all fall on the young moms, so it's just another day of full work. The moms and MILs should come to us if they can, she responded. Another user wrote, When I had little kids, the whole day was focused on my ex-mother-in-law at her house. I had to pick kids up and drive them, and it wasn't fun, relaxing for me. I'm 52 and want my son to focus on his wife. I think when they talk about in the trenches, they mean they don't want to have to travel to anyone else all day or just go celebrate only one mom that day, another mom shared. Now in dog wellness, expert vet, the number one mistake that can cut a dog's lifespan in half. According to Dr. Marty Goldstein, one of America's top veterinarians, canine health is on the decline. Some breeds have even seen their average lifespans cut in half over the past 30 years. And it boils down to one thing, nutrition. Unfortunately, most commercial dog foods are full of artificial preservatives, additives, heavy grains, and low-quality proteins, he explains, even foods that claim to be healthy, organic, or natural. To make matters worse, most commercial dog food is cooked at high temperatures, which can actually destroy most of the nutrients. And research shows the low nutritional value of these foods is a major contributor to low energy, digestive issues, joint discomfort, bad breath, smelly or mussy poop, itchy skin, and a host of other common problems with dogs. However, after years of studying the issue and even writing a best-selling book, Dr. Marty says he finally has found a way to fight back. Luckily, by recognizing the early signs of danger, Dr. Goldstein has helped countless of dogs enhance their well-being. This realization led to Dr. Marty saving countless dogs known as Marty Miracles, including Whiskey the Rottweiler. Whiskey, who was initially given just 24 hours to live by another vet, experienced a traumatic turnaround after Dr. Marty made one simple change. The result? Whiskey was able to live another 6 healthy years. Having looked after thousands of pets in my veterinary practice, I've identified the exact things you need to get back into your dog's diet to help them live a happy, healthy life. It's actually quite easy, and you can do it right from your kitchen. It only takes about 2 minutes a day, and it can have a major impact on your dog's quality of life. Now, for the first time ever, Dr. Marty has created a short video explaining this exact method along with his step-by-step instructions on how to do it at home. And now, from USA Today, people who are the inspirations of the most beautiful songs ever written. Would it surprise you to learn that many of your favorite songs were inspired by actual people? Maybe not. After all, even the greatest artist doesn't exist in a vacuum. So let's take a little trip down memory lane and uncover the stories behind the songs. The faces behind the hits, some, as you might imagine, were lovers. Others were loved from afar. And a few might be a little harder to characterize. A few of the musicians were bold enough to use the person's real name in the song, while others were a bit more circumspect. But each of them created something truly memorable. Every artist needs a muse, an inspiration, someone or something to get creative juices flowing. Read on to discover the stories behind some of the greatest pieces of art ever created. We promise you will be in for a few surprises. Uptown Girl by Billy Joel. Billy Joel was finally getting over his recent divorce, which is a much easier thing to do when you're an internationally famous rock star. So he dated 19-year-old supermodel Elle McPherson, and then he dated and eventually married yet another supermodel, Christie Brinkley. It seems like he originally wrote his smash hit Uptown Girl with Ellie in mind. Though by the time it was released, Christie was the lady in his life, so she stars in the video. In the song, Billy portrays not very rich downtown man, trying to woo a wealthy and refined uptown girl. Originally, due to the numerous posh and beautiful women he was surrounding himself with at the time, he was going to call the song Uptown Girls. Billy has claimed that the style of the song was inspired by the music of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, and it's not hard to see why. Billy Joel, one of the most successful musicians in history, has been reinventing himself for decades. His 1983 album, An Innocent Man, which featured Uptown Girl, alongside with huge hits including Tell Her About It, The Longest Time, and more, is among his best-selling and most highly acclaimed. A tribute to the popular music style of his youth in the 1950s and 60s, is notable for his exuberant sense of optimism. Lady in Red by Chris de Burgh. Chris de Burgh wrote his massive 1986 hit song as a commentary on the fact that the average man fails to remember what his wife was wearing when they first met. Lady in Red chronicles in loving detail the day that de Burgh first met the woman he was destined to marry, Dionne Davidson. Lady in Red was the second single from his 1986 album, Into the Light, and instantly propelled him from a hard-working but relatively unknown niche artist to a major international superstar. The video, complete with the lady in red, received massive airplay on all video channels. Ever since 1986, Chris de Burgh's career has been inextricably linked with Lady in Red. It's a song that inflames the passions of many who hear it, but positively and negatively, it is among the most loved and hated songs of the 80s. MacArthur Park by Richard Harris. MacArthur Park was a huge hit for Richard Harris in 1968. Its classic easy-listening format was nonetheless embellished with intricate time signatures and an overall complex structure. Few people would have guessed that the song was born of a difficult and even painful breakup on the part of songwriter Jimmy Webb. Webb has been dating a lady named Susie Horton. They would often spend their time in Los Angeles' MacArthur's Park since he worked in an office building nearby. The lyrics to the song simply document Webb's feelings and sights as he walked around pondering the relationship he has had at its demise. As a big hit as Richard Harris' original 1968 version of this song was, it was nothing compared to Donna Summer at its peak of her career, when she released a cover version in 1978. Set to disco music, it was a number one hit and one of the biggest songs of the year. Later in 1993, Weird Al Yankovic released a parody called Jurassic Park. Love of My Life by Queen. Freddie Mercury, the lead singer and mastermind behind the acclaimed British rock band Queen, wrote the song Love of My Life for his ex-fiancée and best friend Mary Austin. It debuted on the band's famed studio album, A Night at the Opera. Mercury was 24 when he met Austin, who was 19 at the time. They told interviewers how they instantly felt a connection and soon fell deeply in love. After living together as a couple for 7 years, they separated. Mercury confessed that he was attracted to men, and Austin confirmed that she knew that he was, in fact, gay. Nonetheless, the two remained close-knit, and Mercury even brought Austin an apartment right down the street from his so they could remain in close proximity to each other. Eventually, Austin moved away, got married, and had 2 children, one of which was Mercury's godson. Most people found it difficult to understand the nature of their relationship. Mercury once explained, "All my lovers asked me why they couldn't replace Mary, but it's simply impossible. The only friend I've got is Mary, and I don't want anybody else. To me, she was my common-law wife. To me, it was a marriage. We believe in each other. That's enough for me. I couldn't fall in love with a man the same way as I have with Mary." You can catch a glimpse of their complex relationships as depicted in the film Bohemian Rhapsody. Shine on Your Crazy Diamond by Pink Floyd. Shine on Your Crazy Diamond is a legendary 9-part rock saga written as a tribute to Syd Barrett. Barrett was a founding member of Pink Floyd and was its lead guitarist, singer, and songwriter for the first few years until he was asked to leave in 1968. But Barrett cast a longer shadow than the remaining band members anticipated. And to exorcise their demons, they created this 25-minute-long masterpiece as a homage to him. Eerily, as they were working on the recording, he wandered into the studio and sat down. His appearance had changed so drastically that none of his former bandmates even recognized him for 45 minutes. After Barrett's departure from Pink Floyd in 1968, it seemed inconceivable that the band could continue without him. It was simply unprecedented for a band to continue successfully in the absence of its original creative visionary. Amazingly, bass player Roger Waters stepped up and took over the songwriting, sharing lead singing duties with replacement lead guitarist David Gilmour. Tears in Heaven by Eric Clapton. Eric Clapton experienced heartbreak and tragedy as the 1990s entered. The 1990 helicopter crash that killed his friend and fellow musician Stevie Ray Vaughan also took the lives of Clapton's manager and 2 other people. Just a few months later, Clapton lost his 4-year-old son, Connor, when the toddler fell from the window of the 53rd floor of New York apartment where they were living. Clapton felt the need to isolate himself for a time for the sake of his emotional health. When he was ready to rejoin the living world, he began work on a soundtrack to the movie Rush, for which he co-wrote the song Tears in Heaven with songwriter Will Jennings. Clapton has said that music was a tremendous source of healing, joy, and pleasure for him. After the death of his son, Clampton has become an advocate for child-proofing household hazards. Eric Clampton, who has had a storied career as a giant and pioneer of rock since 1960s, had an unsuspected hit with the soft, understated ballad, Tears in Heaven. It is his best-selling single in North America and among the most successful singles of all time. Shortly after its release, he recorded a live acoustic version as part of the MTV Unplugged series, which was also a big hit. And this is Ed Murphy signing off for Radio Reading Services of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired.